was 1987. The Iran-Iraq War raged on. The U.S. and Soviet Union agreed to reduce their stockpiles of nuclear weapons, and the first Simpsons television cartoons aired. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Also in 1987, President Ronald Reagan swore into office James Billington as the Librarian of Congress. On Wednesday, at the age of 86, Billington retired after a 28-year term that witnessed the rise of the digital age and sweeping changes to every aspect of the publishing world. And with reflections on all of that and much more, the latest news in the book publishing world, Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, joins me now from New York. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, you know, there's a lot to review here. Time passes. But, you know, if you look at the bestseller list for 1987, at least on the fiction side, the names are familiar. 1, 2, 3, Stephen King, Scott Turow, and Tom Clancy. So the more things change, the more they stay the same, I suppose. But in the anniversary category, it's now 10 years since litigation began on the so-called Google's Books case. And on that occasion, you take a look at an issue that's only gotten worse related to it all, which, of course, is orphan works. So tell us what's happening.
Yeah. Can you believe it, Chris? It's been 10 years already since the first lawsuits were filed in the Google case. The Authors Guild pulled the trigger first on September 20th, 2005. The publishers filed their suit a month later on October 20th, 2005. So in Monday's issue, right in the middle of those two, I have a little short anniversary look back at the Google case, and specifically, as you mentioned, regarding the issue of orphan works. And the reason why I'm looking at orphan works is because that's one of the issues that the Google settlement really could have made a big difference in fixing. Alas, the settlement was rejected by the court, and now we have an ad hoc plan that's been put together by the Copyright Office and some stakeholders that attempts to rectify the orphan works issue. Public comments are actually being solicited on that right now, and that comment period actually closes on October 9th. But at this point, 10 years after the Google litigation with the settlement failing and the bright light that was shined on the issue of orphan works, the librarian community is no longer endorsing the orphan works settlement. And there's really two reasons for that. The first reason is because they won in the Google settlement. For all intents and purposes, fair use got a huge boost from the Google litigation, and the library community now feels that, you know, they're pretty much covered by fair use. They're a lot bolder in making uses of works where the copyright history might be murky because of the Google decisions, both in the HathiTrust case and in the main Google case. But the other reason is because the solution that has come out of the Copyright Office, which embraces something called extended collective licensing, while, you know, seemingly workable in purpose, in practice is not working for the libraries. They think it's just far too burdensome. And at this point, the Society of American Archivists and the library associations are, if not outright opposing the orphan works plan put forth by the Copyright Office, but in their public comments that were filed last week, they are certainly not supporting them.
Well, you know, it's remarkable. A decade has passed and so much has changed in the book business. It's nearly unrecognizable. Of course, that was really before the era of the ebook, at least in the common sense of the term. And the other thing is that as I reflect on it, Andrew, is Google is not the company it was. It was a search engine in 2005. And today, well, it's a retailer. It's got cars that drive without drivers. It's got browsers and phones and so much more. And really remarkable advances on both sides there in just 10 years.
Those are two excellent points, and a couple of things that I hit on here in this article as well. And, you know, one is, you know, you can understand why the Authors Guild and publishers were a little freaked out when Google decided it was going to just start scanning the entire contents of libraries for these out-of-print books, because they didn't know what Google was going to become. They had no idea what was going to be the future of all this. They were seemed to be standing up for their rights, and there was a great deal of fear going around the community then. So it's understandable why they reacted the way they did initially. The tragedy of that is that they spent so much time worrying about these books, These were out of print books that were making no money for nobody, that they completely overlooked that another company called Amazon was actually putting together a front list ebook program, the Kindle, at the same time that the publishers were spending all this energy litigating for books that weren't making them any money. Amazon was putting together what would become an ebook commercial revolution. And when Amazon came to publishers with their proposal, the publishers pretty much signed off on it. They didn't even demand terms. They didn't even really think about what might happen if Amazon's Kindle really takes off. They were so concerned about the harm that might come from Google. So to me, that's one of the great tragedies, I think, is that, you know, no, we didn't know what Google was going to become. But if we had a little foresight back in 2005 and thought a little bit more about what might happen if ebooks succeed rather than what might happen if Google scans them, we could have been in a much different position today.
Well, you know, as my father would say, Andrew, if we could predict the future, we'd all be down at the racetrack. And that's just not, unfortunately, in the cards. Well, you know, we again are reflecting on periods of change. One of the things that's been a constant, one of the individuals, who's been a constant throughout all of this has been James Billington, the Librarian of Congress, a really august position appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1987, and now in his 80s, he has retired as of September 30th. We are awaiting announcement of a replacement from the Obama administration. He must be appointed by the president, or he or she, I should say, must be appointed by the president and approved by the Senate. So no surprise that the people in the White House are taking their time there. In the meantime, Deputy Librarian David Mao is going to take the job. What are your thoughts from that story?
Yeah, this is a very interesting development because James Billington wasn't set to retire until January. So he stepped down early. He actually left the office on Wednesday. David Mao was appointed interim Library of Congress director. And nobody really knows why Billington decided to call it quits early. In a statement, Billington said that he had some writing projects that he wanted to get back on. And I believe Dr. Billington is 86 years old, so I could understand not wanting to waste another minute on some projects that he might be working on. But David Mao is a very, very interesting figure. And the reason why people are so interested in him is that he ticks all the boxes for what we would want in a Librarian of Congress, even though he doesn't look like any of the Librarians of Congress we've had in the past. Typically, you know, we spoke about this a little bit on the show a couple months ago now, I believe. The Librarian of Congress hasn't been a librarian, and it's been a figure like Billington who's, you know, been a scholar, somebody who's taken over. But that hasn't worked out for the library over the last few decades, especially in this period of digital change. Critics are pointing out how badly the library is in need of an overhaul. Well, Mr. Mao is a librarian. He was educated at the Catholic University of America with his library degree. He has been involved with all of the major library associations, including the Association of Law Librarians. He was the law librarian for the Library of Congress for a number of years. So, you know, if there was an orphan work solution to come out of the Copyright Office, which of course is part of the Library of Congress, I would think that Mr. Mao, who also has a JD, would be somebody who could really contribute to the process here. I spoke to a number of people about Mr. Mao, and nobody's really offering a comment on him other than to say he's terrific. You know, he's going to do a great job there, and he's been a committed librarian for a number of years. And it's understandable that nobody would come out and say, yes, he should have the job full time, because then if he doesn't get the job full time and there's another appointee, you never know who politically you're going to run afoul of. So people are being guarded with their comments about whether or not Mr. Mao should have the appointment, but I'm not so guarded. I look at his resume and I say, this is the guy. So we will see if this interim appointment becomes permanent.
Well, fascinating. And, you know, it wouldn't be the first time in government that after a nationwide search, they settle on someone who has been there in the office the whole time. Well, finally, as we've been talking about change throughout this episode of Beyond the Book, Andrew, we've got change taking place at Frankfurt Book Fair, which has been no stranger to change over the last few years. Indeed, as it's moved into a whole variety of digital media, films, games, as well as books. What's your expectations for Frankfurt Book Fair 2015?
Well, it's really getting close now. I am excited. as always, for my trip to Frankfurt. I'll see you there this year, Chris. I'm looking forward to that as well. And, you know, this week on the Publishers Weekly site, we had we talked about this last week a little bit. We had our briefcase with the books that are going to be going over there, and there was a little bit of talk last week about some of the programs. Well, I am really looking forward to seeing how the new layout plan works for Frankfurt this year. Frankfurt and its director, Jürgen Booz, have been quite aggressive over the past decade in pushing forward a pretty aggressive overhaul of the fair to keep the fair a prominent fixture in the book world. Just like, you know, books are facing having to embrace a new role in the digital age, Jürgen Booz and the Frankfurt Book Fair have done the same. They've really been aggressively pushing for new partners and new areas of discussion for the Frankfurt Book Fair. And this year, of course, is going to be one of the biggest years ever for change. I am looking forward to taking part in an interview of Hachette Chief Arnaud Nouri. That's going to take place at the fair on Wednesday about 2 o'clock in the Business Club. I'm also really looking forward to the issue of open access, which has always been a fascinating issue for me that I think impacts publishing far more than just in the academic community, which it serves. With technology and advancement, just the way our attitudes about publishing in general are changing. So I know that you're involved with an open access town hall, so I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, indeed, you're right. We will be holding Copyright Clearance Center sponsoring our annual town meeting on open access. It takes place on Thursday in the Alliance Function Room there in Hall 4.C. And, you know, Andrew, from our perspective, open access really is another story where it's continuing and developing over time. We were made aware of open access a couple of years ago when a variety of funders and governments, you know, really strengthened the mandates they had to make the research they fund available through open access. A lot of publishers and authors kind of went with all of that and probably thought that was the end of that. But open access is about to see the next wave of change, and that's what we'll be talking about. We've got a variety of people discussing the issue from many angles. We will feature Agnès Henri from Paris, Melinda Kennaway from Kudos, the recent winner of the ALPSP Innovation Award. We've got Randy Petway from Publishing Technology, and Helen Sun joining us from Beijing Ingenta. So really, among others. So a global look at this issue. And as you say, it's not just about journal publishing anymore. We recently featured a podcast with Melisande Scheld from Publishing Technology, looking at whether scholarly books are going to see book processing charges the way that scholarly journals have seen article processing charges. So there's really quite a lot to cover there, and people can check out much more about it at our website, copyright.com/Frankfurt. So we will see you in Frankfurt in about 2 weeks' time. We'll have you back on the show next week before we all hop on airplanes and head across the Atlantic to Germany. But in the meantime, Andrew, thanks so much for joining us today on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.